the greatest two-man duos in all of basketball, right? Anthony Davis and LeBron are going to be damn high on that list, as they should. Those are two top 12 to 13 players in basketball, however you want to rank them. But for some reason, them boys cannot touch Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Kenny Beecham podcast. Today, we got to talk about LeBron James hitting 40,000 career points and counting, and counting. We got to talk about why the Denver Nuggets have the LA Lakers number, and I guess the number of pretty much every team across the association. I'm going to talk about some games today because this Sunday has been a great day of hoops and many, many more. Be sure to leave a like, subscribe. Let's get into the episode. So LeBron James hit 40,000 career points, and it's still a number that I can't even really, I guess, completely understand. Like, of course, if I took some time, I could count to that number, but in the terms of points scored throughout history, it makes no sense. I remember when I was a kid, we had to do a project on our favorite thing in the world. 10-year-old me, can you guess what I did my project on, my little report on? It was, of course, basketball. And one of the things that my teacher told me I should write about is some things that I don't believe will ever be broken. Now, again, 10-year-old me was not this super NBA fan, but I did see the number of, 38,000, so on and so on points. And in my mind, there was no way that was ever going to be broken. Kobe Bryant was the greatest scorer I'd ever seen with my own two eyes at that point. And he wasn't even really close. So I remember writing about that. I remember writing about AC Green and his total games played consecutively. I remember writing about Scott Skiles' 30 assist game. And nowadays, that 30 assist thing might not be as unbreakable. But I remember writing about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and his dominance. And 10-year-old me, this is 2006. This is 2006. So this is pre-computers in every room. This is pre-iPads. So the way I was doing my research was going to the library. And the library was telling me some very similar stuff. These are the rules. The Guinness Book of World Records, total points, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in 2006. It was widely known to be a record that will not be broken. And here we are in 2024, about 34 years since Kareem played his very last NBA game. LeBron did it. And I don't know. I think most of NBA fans were watching that game because we wanted to see a history. But for me, it hit a little bit differently. I had a moment watching that game, and I've already said this before, that since I've become a father, brother, I have been as emotional as any time in my life. How the hell did I get emotional watching LeBron James score 40,000? There's been a journey in my life as an NBA fan. I've said this before. My very first game that I remember watching as a kid was Allen Iverson versus Jamal Crawford in the 2002-2003 NBA season. Allen Iverson had like 40, and that's why he became my favorite player in the league at that point. And Jamal Crawford, I don't know if I said Murray, Jamal Crawford at that point had like 28, 30 or something. So he had become one of my favorite players in the league. And that was the moment where I fell in love with the NBA. That's it. The next draft class is 2003. That's when Bron jumped to the scene. So 99.9% of my NBA fandom, LeBron has been a part of it. Not me as a fan, right? I've been very candid about this, that I was a LeBron James hater from seventh grade to like my sophomore year of high school. Don't mention LeBron around me because I was a hater. You got to remember, the Chicago Bulls were the one seed, Derrick Rose, the MVP in 2011. So of course I hated the Miami Heat. Of course I hated LeBron James. But my entire life as an NBA fan, LeBron James has been a part of it, for better or for worse. Watching him dominate the Eastern Conference, what is it, 8-9 Eastern Conference finals appear, or Eastern Conference wins, to see him win one for Cleveland eventually. I've seen it all. So when I watched this man get 40,000 points, to know that in my mind, LeBron James went from a guy that I was neutral on for the first part of his career to hated his guts to eventually becoming a fan, especially when we got around 2016, and now to see him hit 40,000 is insane. So I want to tip my cap to LeBron because I don't think most people, or maybe most people, but some of y'all may not realize how ridiculous of a number this really is and what it really takes to get to a number like this. And again, in counting. By the time he stops lacing them up, he might be at I don't know, if it's next year, it might be 42,000. If it's a couple years down the line, it might be 44 to 45,000 total points in his NBA career. He has been the pillar of excellence, of consistency, and of health. So when LeBron James hit 40,000 points, obviously, I had to get a joke off because if you watched the game, you saw how big the Kung Fu Panda ad was on that court. LeBron James scored 40,000 points. And my mind was like, Kung Fu Panda 4 is coming out. You like that? That's anyway. The conversation went like, okay, he's got 40K. Is there anybody we can see beating 40,000 and eventually beating 42,000, 44,000, 45,000, wherever he ends up? I feel like that when LeBron James is done, the next 10-year-old in 2028, again, I'm hoping you play the 2030, Bron. In 2028, when they have to do a report about their favorite thing and they write about basketball, I hope and I think that that 10-year-old will write about the amount of points LeBron James had in his NBA career. I believe it's going to be unbeatable. Now, the argument against that is like, hey, Kenny, the inflation numbers across the association, we got as many people averaging 30 as we did when LeBron James first started. Well, we got, what, 7 to 8 more than when LeBron James first started. So people will be on pace to break these numbers. And I understand that. So my question to y'all, so who are those people? The first name that came to mind to a lot of people is Luka Doncic. And there's an article that that Bleach Report put out a little while ago. A couple hours before I hit record here. Kind of breaking out the path for the players that we know today to break this record. Now, can somebody come on in 4 years and be better than LeBron? Probably not. But it's a possibility that we see an 18, 19-year-old come into the league and then he's doing ridiculous stuff. But based on the pool of talent we know across the world right now, Luka was the first name that came to mind. And it makes sense. Luka can average 30 points for years and years and years, and he came into the league as the rookie of the year, averaging 20-plus points per game. He's been relatively healthy throughout his career. Again, the health is a huge, huge part in beating 40,000 points. But in this article, if Luka Doncic stays on his current pace, the current pace he's playing right now, which is MVP caliber, averaging 30-plus points and rebounds, assists, whatever, whatever, he would need to play in the league for at least 22 years. To catch up to 40,000. Now, I don't know Luka Doncic personally, but I've seen some interviews about him and saying how much he just wants, not that he wants to retire, but that he will be very okay with retiring, especially if he gets that championship. So the idea of Luka playing for 22 more years and not just playing. Remember this. It's not just playing for 22 more years. It's dominating for 22 more years. You know what Luka is doing right now? He would have to do this for 22 straight years in order to catch LeBron James. Another name that came to mind to a lot of people was Devin Booker. Devin Booker has scored more points per minute than LeBron James has. Devin Booker has also scored a ton of points. And it doesn't like he's going to stop anytime soon. By the end of the season, his average for points per year will be around 1,600 points per year. Pretty good, pretty good. That number needs 20 more years to just get to 32,000. I think Book is out of the running. He can average what he averages right now for 20 years and he won't even come close to 40. And then the one that everybody else is saying is, of course, that alien that plays, that French alien that plays for the Spurs, and Victor Wembanyama. I don't have a good argument against Wemby other than the fact that he's a 7'4 big and the body has to hold up for 20 plus years at this pace, right? I'm knock on wood. I need it to happen. Wemby is ridiculous. We're going to talk about him more in depth later in the episode. But that's like the only guy. And the reason he's so high is because we see him at just 19 to 20 years old doing what he does. And every single month of his NBA career, he's got better and better and better. LeBron James jumped to the scene. He averaged about 20 points per game his rookie season. In his sophomore year, he averaged 27. Wemby could do something somewhat similar. But remember, LeBron was excellence, consistency, health. Those are the big three things. My first time seeing LeBron James miss significant time in my life was when he got to the Lakers. And at that point, he was already 36 years old. He came in at 18. So we got 17 to 18 straight seasons of LeBron being healthy. Now, of course, we got knick-knack injuries that might hurt him out here, might hurt him out there. But for the most part, he's played a, oh, I wish I knew the number, a high percentage of possible games. So I just want to tip my cap to Bron. I mean, he don't need me to do it. I mean, he's arguably the greatest to ever do it. But that record of 40,000 and counting feels like it might be unbreakable one day. I do want to talk about the game, though. Another time where LeBron breaks a record or sets a record and they lose. OKC last year, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and company said, forget this. I know you passed to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and we're going to stop playing basketball for 12 minutes so we can celebrate this, but we still need to win this. And they did. And in this game, it was versus the Denver Nuggets. And the Denver Nuggets have had their way with the LA Lakers. The numbers will tell you, last year, it was one of the closest sweeps in the history of basketball when they saw each other in the Western Conference. And that's the way all of their matchups feel. These two teams will fight it out for 44 straight minutes, back and forth, back and forth. But those last 4 minutes, you best believe you can count on the Denver Nuggets for taking over. And it happened the last time they played against each other, and it happened this time. Last time you saw Austin Reaves go for the seal on Jokic, Jokic's eyes behind his head, I think it was Michael Porter Jr. on the wing, splash. And in this one, I was very intrigued. KCP has been in and out of the lineup with some knick-knack injuries. He did not play in this one. And I was wondering how important KCP could be for a matchup like the LA Lakers. Didn't matter too much. One of the reasons it didn't matter too much because the Lakers don't have a lead guard that needs a guy like KCP, right? You need a guy like KCP against Steph Curry's world, the Luka Doncic, the Kyrie Irvins, these high-volume score guards, and the Lakers don't have that. Their two best players are a forward and a center, or a forward and a forward, if you ask Anthony Davis. So they didn't even need KCP. We get to late in this game, and there was one moment in time. Like I like to watch my games, especially if it's nasty televised games, in Discord with the homies. One of the homies, my boy Mike. If you watch my other podcast, Numbers on the Board, you know Mike is a diehard Lakers fan. There was a moment where Aaron Gordon took the ball and stepped back three-point shot from the right corner. I told Mike, game over. You might as well fire up your Twitch stream, my boy, because this game is wrapped if Aaron Gordon is hitting that shot. And it was. Just like that, a game that was tied up. We saw a Justin Holiday three, who was unstoppable, corner three, his entire career. Don't leave Justin Holiday open in the corner. Justin Holiday corner three, Aaron Gordon corner three, and so on and so forth. And it got me thinking about like the numbers, right? The numbers and the clutch. And the numbers say that the Lakers are one of the best clutch teams in basketball, if not the best clutch team in basketball, depending on if you're going by percentage, the Lakers were number one going into that last game. If you're going by total wins, the Nuggets. The Nuggets are 20-10 in clutch games, and then the Lakers after this one were 18-8. So the numbers say that like the Lakers are a damn good clutch team. And the eye test says that too. The previous game, Lord knows it shouldn't have taken overtime to beat the Washington Wizards, but it did, and you won that game. Shout out to Brown with the big old block. The game before that, they go against the Clippers, and they are down by 20-something points going into the fourth, and they put it together in the clutch. So we've seen them win clutch games. But against the Nuggets, that don't happen. If you ask somebody, what's the greatest two-man duos in all of basketball, right? Anthony Davis and LeBron are going to be damn high on that list, as they should. That's two NBA 75 players. Those are two top 12 to 13 players in basketball, however you want to rank them. But for some reason, them boys cannot touch Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. They just can't. Two NBA 75 players versus the MVP of this league, maybe, and a non-all-star. Now, it's a fake non-all-star because we know who Jamal Murray is and can be, but they cannot hang on. And part of this for the Lakers is that they have no answer for Jamal Murray. Right? They have no answer. In this game, it was Cam Reddish down the stretch because Darvin Ham thought, even though Cam Reddish is nearly a zero on the offensive side of the ball, nearly a zero. We talk a 29% three-point shooter on open shots. Like, that's as close to zero. Teams do not guard him, right? We're okay with having him on the court because we need somebody to stay in front of Jamal Murray. And guess what? He didn't. He didn't. Jamal Murray still cooked him, but he's their best option. Darvin Ham sacrificed all of D'Angelo Russell in that fourth quarter to get Cam Reddish in this game. And if they win the game, then you're like, oh my God, Darvin Ham, you're a genius. But since they lost and they needed some more offensive punch, you're like, man, D'Angelo Russell's playing phenomenal basketball for the last month or so, and he doesn't close out this game? Like, I would be, and I'm not an NBA coach, Darvin Ham has forgot more basketball than I will ever know. I always want to give the utmost respect to our coaches and our players because me at home, hell, I've never played high-level basketball. How many high school years I got? Two. One of them barely count because we're talking about like 30 minutes played the whole season. You feel me? But the way D'Angelo Russell plays or has been playing in this game, I'm okay with sacrificing some of that point of attack defense if that means D'Angelo's on the court when it matters the most. They don't have that. The Lakers don't have that guy. At least right now, I guess you can argue that it's Jared Vanderbilt, but against the Denver Nuggets last year in the playoffs, Jared Vanderbilt could not even play, But it was just, again, an interesting game and another reason to believe for me that the Nuggets are the team to beat out West. Now, there are a lot of great teams. And right now, as I'm recording this episode, OKC and Phoenix is just tipped off on this monitor. So if you see me glancing off, that's why. Right now, we have a 3-way tie for the one seed. Again, it's going to change because OKC is either going to win or lose this game. But right now, it is OKC, it is Minnesota, it is the Nuggets, right? Nuggets currently 6-game win streak. And the reason this is significant is because after the All-Star break, KCP did an interview. And KCP told the world that during the All-Star break, Nikola Jokic hit the group chat. Which I know he's a leader, right? And he's just not one of those vocal leaders that you normally see. But it is still weird to me to picture Nikola Jokic texting with emojis and stuff. Basically telling the team, this is where it starts, right? Championship hangover over. And KCP said out of his own mouth, we're going for the one seed. Wow. Didn't expect it. You come off an NBA championship, you coast a little bit, right? We just won this championship, and 3 months later, we're back to work trying to win number two. Even on our episode with Michael Porter Jr. a few months back, he mentioned that, right? So for me, it was pretty easy to kind of pencil them in to like the 2 seed or the 3 seed, hell, even a 4 seed a couple weeks ago before the Clippers started their little skid. But Jokic said no. KCP said no, we want the 1 seed. And I think if the Nuggets win the 1 seed, I already have them as my favorite to come out the West. If they win the 1 seed, that favorite, 60%, 70% confidence I have in them go so much higher because they are the best home team in basketball, Western Conference basketball, because the Celtics are 29-3 right now. You saw that game for the Celtics? Okay. But if they have home court advantage, we saw it last year, unmessable at home. If they have that in every series going at least until the finals, I feel very good about their play. But again, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they lost tonight a game that was 89-88, a dogfight. I loved every single second of it. In a league where we have 120s to 121s, a 89-88 game, I'm here for it. But they lost that game against the Clippers. And again, the Thunder are playing right now after a not-so-great loss a couple nights before. So it's possible that Denver still takes that 1 seed. And I'm just going to say this right now. My opinions about the MVP and all this type of stuff has always been fluctuating, right? I think that's healthy. Like I said this on my other on numbers on the board, and some of the comments was like, Kenny, flip-flop it like a sandal. Brother, first of all, that's fun. When you have 4, and I'm counting 4, sorry, Jason Tatum, sorry, Donovan Mitchell, sorry, DeMont Sabonis, I guess, according to Perk. The 4 people of Luka, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis, and then Jokic. When you have these 4 people playing as well as they are, and none of them have done enough to put themselves head and shoulders above their competition, it should be fluid. Because 1 week we can see Shai put up 31 points exactly every night, and they go on a 5-game win streak in a week and a half. The next, we can see Jokic score against 2 teams that competing for a championship and dominate those teams. The next, we can see Luka put up a 38-point triple-double in a win. Like, it should always be fluid, especially when it's this close. So, hell yeah, I'm flip-flopping like a sandal because the world around me is changing. The league around me is changing. So, right now, in this moment of time, it's Nikola Jokic. We could do a weekly roundup. Every Monday episode, I'll tell you who my current MVP is, and we'll see if it changed. 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was Giannis. Now it's back to Jokic. And we'll see. We'll see. One thing Darvin Ham continues to do in this series when they play against each other, and if they go against each other in the playoffs, I guess it's a possibility because the Lakers are the 10th seed. They would have to win their 2 play-in games to end up here, and depending on where the Nuggets fall, they could see each other in the first round, hypothetically. Darvin Ham's got, not give it a rest, but we can't go in and continue to have Rui as the main defender of Jokic. It worked for 1 half in game 1 of the Western Conference Finals last year. And then Jokic was like, okay, this is different, but I'm still Jokic. These last couple games, they've gone against each other. They've done it, and they haven't really switched up too much. And Jokic has gone over, around, through Rui Hachimura. Shout out to Rui. He's competing every single night. I can't do nothing but respect that. But Jokic is one of the most unguardable players, if not the most unguardable player in basketball. And putting somebody that's 4 inches shorter than him, 3 inches shorter than him, is just not the answer, especially if it's not a big, burly body. I know Anthony Davis does his thing as the roamer, as the help man. but I want to see some of that. You know what I'm saying? Just a little bit of it. There's some interesting statistics about D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, and Anthony Davis. I think the whole season long, Anthony Davis, the Lakers have been a better defensive team with him off the court. And I'm watching these games trying to figure out why that is the case. And I don't think it's of Anthony Davis's doing. I think some of that's like the matchups of when Anthony Davis is playing. But it is just weird to see one of our best, because we can all agree, forget what the numbers are saying. We can all agree Anthony Davis is one of the best defensive players in basketball. It's just weird to see somebody as dominant of a defensive threat go out and have the advanced stats to say this team is better defensively without you, you know? So, hey, if we get that in the first round, I'm here for it. I don't really know. Before we go to our favorite segment, Ask KB, I want to talk about one of the other games that happened today. And it's going to be very, very brief. Matter of fact, let's hit three of them. I'm sorry. Very brief of three games, like a couple sentences of each. The 76ers, shout out to you. I'm tipping my hat. Because I mentioned before that I was, and I guess I still am to an extent, a little bit worried about the 76ers this season. They're, I think, a game away from being a playing team. And national televised game versus the Dallas Mavericks is a game that you should probably lose. They didn't. Kelly Oubre came up clutch after Tyrese Maxey hit his head on Derrick Jones Jr.'s leg. And then second game in a row where Tobias Harris hit a big-time shot and had big-time games. So 28 this night, and I think 32 the night before. So shout out to them. That's a huge, huge win to keep them afloat. And I just read that Joel Embiid is starting to work out a little bit. So staying yourself above that plan would be crucial, especially if you believe that Embiid is coming back. But on the other side of things, as good of a win as it is for the 76ers, it's equally as awful of a loss for the Dallas Mavericks. Last time they lost a game, it was against the Boston Celtics. Not mad at that. The Celtics are elite. They're the best individual team in basketball, and they're doing some things recently that I'm excited about. But the sample size is so small that I don't even want to bring it to the table. Just say I got to watch the next couple games. So there's no shame in losing to the best team in basketball, but losing to a team that came into this since the Joel Embiid injury as the 29th ranked defense, it's pretty bad. And there's a lot of things I saw in this game. My number one thing in my notes about this game: Tim Hardaway Jr. should not be playing much. He played 15 minutes in this. That's not a lot of minutes, Kenny. When you shoot 1 for 8, that 15 minutes feels like 40. And in the last 10 games, he's shooting 33% from 3, and he's a high-volume shooter. He's 0 for 6 tonight. It's just a player that I feel like... Now, understand the idea of Tim Hardaway Jr., and for most part of the season, he had been living up to that to an extent. Like, he's having career lows on percentages, but he's a microwave type of guy. When he's on, you got to keep him on the court, and you usually let shooters of this caliber play through it. Sometimes we got to pass the torch a little bit. In a game like this, when he comes out and he starts off 0-for-4, I'm like, you know what? Let me try to figure some things out. Dante Exum's fresh off his injury. I know. But 8 minutes for Dante Exum is not enough. Daniel Gafford is kind of going through the thing that a lot of Dallas Mavericks centers end up going through. Now, in this game, I think he had 3 fouls in like 13 minutes. So it's not like he was amazing. Hell, he might not have been good, or he was bad tonight. But Dallas Mavericks, they always end up keeping a few centers on the roster. And there's always one that's relegated to like, hey, you may be better than we think, but you're still not going to be playing a bunch of minutes. And it's the second game in a row where Daniel Gafford has been relegated to 15 minutes or so. Remember what you gave up for him? I'm pretty sure it was a first-round pick. You gave a first-round pick for a backup that's not even playing real backup minutes because you feel more comfortable with Maxi Kleber at this point. It's not the greatest thing. This team came out with no energy. They had like 6 turnovers in the first quarter, and the 76ers have averaged the most steals per game. Like, the 76ers are a very active defensive team, but you still shouldn't be turning the ball over that many times. Nobody in this game impressed me other than Derrick Jones Jr. Derrick Jones Jr. was everywhere. He was phenomenal offensively, defensively. Everybody else, I hate it in this game specifically. You know, shout out to the guys. But in this game, it was just ugly. It's ugly. And then they did this thing, and you look at the score, Kenny, 120-116, man, that fake old comeback. The Dallas Mavericks are notorious for being down big and then making a little run to make it look interesting. And it ended up being interesting, but this wasn't a game for them. And this is eerily similar. And I don't think it's going to go to this extreme because I still believe in this group of guys. When Kyrie Irving got traded to the Dallas Mavericks, there are a few games of a honeymoon phase where you're like, oh shit, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving look phenomenal together. And then things didn't look as great. And then eventually, because of some injuries, they opted to relax, let's just say that, wink, wink, and ended up falling into the lottery and got Derek Lively. This year, remember that first game? Remember that first game against OKC with PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford? Luke was just throwing the ball at the rim and just saying, go get it. And they was going to get it. And we like, oh my God. They're like also like a 3-game honeymoon phase. And since then, it has not looked good on either side of the ball. So it's just something I'm monitoring, man. I was so optimistic about them. I think even on one of the episodes, I was saying one of the three teams that's going to take a big jump. It was the Warriors, who have not taken a big jump. They've been playing okay if you get rid of tonight. Who else? I had the Warriors at the Mavs, and I had the Heat. And the Heat are doing their thing. Right now, they're back to the seventh seed, but they're doing their thing. 8-2 in their last 10. They're playing great. But some of my other picks, not so good. Next game, quickly. Like I said, a couple sentences. They end up being a lot more than a couple of sentences. The Warriors lost by a gazillion points. I'm going to leave it at that. I just want to talk about the Boston Celtics as they continue to roll. And again, I mentioned just a small sample size of something I'm noticing. I don't want to bring to the table too much, but a lot of questions like, what do the Boston Celtics do if the shots are falling? Today, they fail. They fail like I don't even know what. You know what I'm saying? It was a downpour. It was, I don't know the words. I took a weather, can you believe it? I took a weather class my senior year of high school. That's how little we care about senior years of high school. And there was like a specific word for, anyway, they hit all the shots. But the question is, what are they going to do when the shots aren't hitting? When they played against the Dallas Mavericks a couple nights ago, they did some stuff in the game before that. They did some stuff that makes me interested. I can't talk about it just yet because I need a bigger sample size. Clippers won a game that was 89 to 88. Ugly, ugly game. I loved every single second of it. That's all I really got to say about that one. And then before we hit record here, Wimby. Should I do the Wimby stuff now? I'll do the Wimby stuff now. It was supposed to be later in the show, but since we're here, they won a game 117 to 105. And before we go to there, our boy, Tyrese Haliburton is going through a ridiculous, ridiculous slump. You can see it. Everything about this is not the Tyrese that we've seen the first couple months of the NBA season. And I don't think it's a coincidence that this slump started after his hamstring injury. The hamstring injury is one of those ones that are lingering, that even when you're healthy, you're not. And I have not talked to him about it, so I can't comment too much. But again, the last game against the Pelicans, he ended up with 0 points and minus 40, which is the first game that he's had under had 0 points since 2021, I want to say. And a minus 40 in any circumstance is just terrible, especially for your star player. And in this one, and though I did not watch this entire game, I only watched the last 7 minutes of it. I want to go back to watch the rest. 4 for 16, 12 points, 8 assists, one turnover. The Pascal Siakam, Tyrese Haliburton pairing has not been phenomenal just yet. They're like a minus net rating of 4 point something. Still a lot to see. And if Tyrese is not playing at the All-NBA caliber player that he was before this, they're just not going to win many games, honestly. And their three-point volume has dropped significantly since the trade deadline. No surprise, they traded away Buddy Hield. But today, they were 6 of 30 from three. Again, I need to go watch the game to figure out what these looks look like, but nobody on their bench hit a three, but TJ McConnell hit 26 points because he's TJ McConnell. He's going to get to the basket at will. It's really about Wimby here. Again, I only watched the last 7 minutes, so I cannot talk to the first three and a half quarters. 31 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 6 blocks. And they gave this man the ball down the stretch. And we talked about his game where he was at the Sacramento Kings, where he was 1 assist away from a 5-on-5, and they did not give him the ball. In this game, let me go to the fourth quarter specifically and go to Victor Wembanyama. Wimby was a part of so many different actions in this one, and it was a pleasure to see, where you could see that they wanted to get this man the ball. And even though he didn't score a ton of points in the fourth quarter, the play was going through him. There's a play with like 2 minutes to go. Again, it's still a really close game at this point. They give him to him in a post, and he's waiting for the double because you know it's coming. A double does come, and then Jeremy Sochan cuts down the paint. He tosses it off to Jeremy, and Jeremy lays the ball up. This guy's phenomenal. And the game I really wanted to talk about before this was him versus Chet from a few nights ago. It's kind of played out because it's been a few nights, but I still want to talk about it a little bit. And he all but secured the Rookie of the Year. He's probably done it a while ago, but this was just it. That one image of him blocking Chet Holmgren is crazy. I think it was Chris Vernon that said this, that there's one player, maybe in the entire world, that could have blocked that shot from Chet Holmgren. A 7-1 player in the middle of a jump shot. Maybe one person in the entire world to block that shot, and it's Wimby. And he said that, and I'm like, damn. Maybe a bit hyperbolic, but the idea sits. Damn. Might be true. And I watched these two guys play against each other, because though Wimby has been phenomenal, and I got no doubt in my mind, we're talking about next season, he's going to be a top 15 player in the league. I'm being honest with you. Maybe even top 10. He's been phenomenal, but it's also about Chet too. Chet has the same exact season in a lot of other rookie classes. He is by far the rookie of the year. Last year, him versus Paolo, if he had this exact season last year versus Paolo, there's a real conversation on if Chet wins this rookie of the year, right? Because of the defensive impact, both sides of the floor. I think Paolo's first year was 20 points per game, 7 rebounds, wasn't extremely efficient. But again, first option, rookie season, bad team. I'm giving that a slight pass. But Chet, if he has these exact numbers of like 17 points per game, elite level defense, 7.5 rebounds, there is a real conversation that he wins that last year. And you think about that almost every single year. Like, he's just got extremely unlucky that he hurt his foot in that pro-am run. Because now it's him versus Chet when you think about, him versus Wimby, when you think about this, not this rookie class, because it's not his draft class, but it's his rookie class. You know what I'm saying? But Chet's been phenomenal, right? He's been great. And he had the little part of his season where he hit the rookie wall, and then he burst straight through that. And he had another great game and a great game. And again, I'm glancing over, and he's not on the court right now. But Wimby and Chet, a great matchup for years to be. OKC's already a phenomenal team. I'm assuming they're going to be a phenomenal team for the foreseeable future, as long as they have an MVP candidate and then another all-star in Jalen Williams. The Spurs are going to have to work their way to that. But the way they've been playing, you know what? This is not in my notes, but I'm going to quickly do it. It's bad business to do this on the fly and not have it in my notes. But this is something I should have looked up before, but it didn't cross my mind. I want to look up where their defense is over this last stretch. The San Antonio Spurs in the last 2 weeks. Oh, never mind. It's 23rd in the last 2 weeks. But their offense is 13th. Now they're 2-4 in that week, but two wins for this team is pretty damn elite when you think about how many losses they had for the first couple weeks or months of the season. So Wimby's incredible. No surprise. Chet is also incredible. Give both of them flowers. This is the last time I'm comparing them to, because I already see who the rookie of the year is. Now it's time for my favorite segment, Ask KB. All you got to do is go onto Twitter, use the hashtag AskKB, go into the comment section of these episodes, AskKB, and ask a question. The first one comes from JR Blanks, I've answered this question like 2 to 3 times, so he continues to get us at least something to talk about. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to JR. What is the next untouchable record to be touched? I don't like the way you worded that. There are a few. The first one that came to mind, and I actually don't think this is be broken, because Hakeem Olajuwon has 3,830 blocks in his NBA career. 3,830 blocks. That is 300 more blocks than number two, who's Dikembe Mutombo, who's notorious for blocking shots. He was still 300 away from what Hakeem Olajuwon did. Is there a guy in the league right now you think he could touch that record? We just talked about it last segment. Wimby is averaging 3.3 blocks per game his rookie season. If he just stayed here, he didn't get better at blocking shots. He didn't get an increase in total, you know, per year. At 3.3, he'd have to do it for 15 years. Oh, my God. Now I'm saying it aloud. That seems kind of crazy, right? All right, get to the next one. I honestly do believe the assists in a single game record can be broken. We've seen some 20s. We've seen some high 20s, right? I think Rajon Rondo hit a 27. I think Kevin Johnson had a 27. Like, we've had a few people hit 27 and just stop there. But with the high pace of play and some people like Luka Doncic or Tyrese Halliburton, or I guess that's it. Those would probably be the two candidates that I have. 30 assists is not that crazy. Now, the problem is Luka Doncic definitely want to get his 30. And Tyrese has had games with a lot less I'm a score thing. But I think you need to be able to score to open up the game to get 30. You also need your players to just hit a bunch of shots. I do think 30 is not out of the realm of possibility, though. I think that if prime Rajon Rondo was playing right now, that would be over 30. Because Rondo was the player that went out there and he made sure he got assists. He made sure he got assists. He will end the game with 2 points at the foul line and look and be like, damn, 19 assists? Like, he loved passing the ball. He loved stats, but he loved passing the ball to get those stats. But he also played in an era where things weren't as fast and as high scoring as now. So is there a guard that could come into the league over the next couple of years and have that? No, because every single guard comes in as not a traditional point guard. Where I think the idea of a traditional point guard has evolved now. The traditional point guard is what we're seeing right now, and not so much the people that are averaging 15 assists per or whatever. Scott Skiles is also just a random guy to have that record. That's my last point about it. Not John Stockton, not Christopher Emmanuel Paul. It's Scott Skiles. 0 All-Star appearances, I'm pretty sure, for Scott Skiles. Zero. Next one comes from Evan. If you can change one thing that you did when you first started YouTube as a career, what would it be? Now, there's not a ton of things that I regret, right? I think every single video that I've put out in my life got me to the point where I feel more comfortable putting out the next one. But the one thing, and this is before it became a career though, so I'm changing your question just a little bit. The one thing I wished I did was be more consistent earlier. For the creators out there that are trying to find their voice and trying to figure out, is this for me or is it not for me? The best advice I can have is to do it. And not just do it consistently. For the first year or so of me creating content on YouTube, there was really no consistency. I would upload a video on the first day of the month was a Monday. The next time I upload was the 23rd. It's not because I didn't want to, and not because I was lazy. It was because I was afraid. At this point, I'm 13 years old. Voice is all squeaky. Don't know who I am as a person just yet. Is the internet going to judge? This is before we even had face cams back in the YouTube game. So in my name, was it my name? But still in my mind, I was afraid to put the content out in the world because I didn't know what other people would think about it. And now looking back on it, that's the dumbest thing. And I'm encouraging you to not have that same fear. Oh, will they like it? Is it good enough? Who cares? Who cares? I have made hundreds of bad videos. Still made them. Because eventually I found out that it doesn't really matter. This thing of creating content brings me joy. So I'm going to do it. So don't care about if it's good enough. I know people in my personal life that have been creating content for a little bit, but they're perfectionists. They need the edit to look exactly like this. And I think that's good, but can be unhealthy. If it's preventing you from pressing publish, then you're going too far. Making sure that the font of your captions are what you want is important. Making sure you feel good about the content and the time is important. But don't let those things prevent you from putting the content out completely. When I was younger, I was afraid. Oh man, I'm a lot younger than iPod King Carter. I'm a lot younger than Chris Smooth. I don't know how to edit like QJB. These are names that are still around to this day, but when I was 13 years old, 14 years, damn. 14 years ago. Oh my God. Those are the big dogs. The Case Spade, the prospects, if you know, you know. They had a way about their content that I wasn't fulfilling. And I was afraid to put my content out there because of that. Don't be afraid. Don't compare yourself to the next content creator. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Don't compare yourself to nobody on the internet, first of all. Nobody's living as good as you think they are. I'm being honest with you. You see a certain player driving these crazy cars, and it ain't what you think. I'm on the other side of this. I've seen behind the curtain of some of the greatest, biggest creators in the world. It ain't like that. Well, no, not sometimes it is. But it ain't. And most of the time, it's not like that. The last question comes from Fomva. I don't know how to pronounce it, but my apologies. What are your top three favorite MVP campaigns of the last 20 years? Yes, let's get into it. The obvious answer is 2011 Derrick Rose. I'm not gonna count it. As a kid or a high schooler or whatever I was. Oh, yeah, I was going to my freshman year of high school at that point. Nothing was more exciting to watch Derrick Rose, but that's easy. You knew that was going to be my answer. So I picked three other ones. The first one is the 2016 Stephen Curry season. The most dominant season I've ever seen from somebody not named LeBron James. And I mean that. And we're talking about with 6'3 Steph Curry, 6'2 Steph Curry, dominant. 50-40-90 on his volume is ridiculous. And night in, night out, I'm tuned in like, oh, this could not get no better. This cannot get no better. And it continued to get better and better and better until we got to the finals. You know, I had to throw that in now. The next one, in real time, I always like to admit, my dad always said, a man is someone that can admit when he was wrong. In 2017, my MVP ballot had James Harden as the winner. 2017, that's the year I said, right? 2017, James Harden was my MVP. The winner of that award was actually Russell Westbrook. And I look back on that take and I cringe. What the hell was I thinking about? Because that is one of the most cool and fun seasons ever. Forget the fact that they are this seed and whatever, where they got bounced in the playoffs. That shit is irrelevant. Fun seasons? The first triple-double year is the peak fun. Game winner, clutch shot, everything you can imagine. And for some reason, old younger me was like, oh, James Harden. James Harden got his eventually, so shout out to James. But that was not his season. It was Russ's season, and I was a jackass for having James Harden then. And my last one is 2013 LeBron. In 2020, LeBron James realized that he was stronger than everybody in the world, and he played like that for an entire season. There was no possession where he did not exert all the energy necessary. You know how Giannis plays right now as far as getting to the basket at will? LeBron did that all of 2013. He felt embarrassed about some of the stuff that happened the previous year. He said, oh, y'all gonna respect me again. And he did it. He was stronger than everybody. He was faster than everybody. And he let you know it. There was zero spacing. Zero spacing on that team. Didn't matter. Bron got to the basket at will. So those are my three favorite of the last 20 years. Let me know what you think. I think that's a really good question. I thought about Giannis's second MVP season. That was a good one. And then first Jokic year was up there too. But I went with the ones that aren't as recent. The last topic, I don't even know if it should be a topic, but I'm going to talk about it anyway, okay? All of the NBA awards, other than the MVP, which we briefly talked about earlier in the show, every single other award, in my opinion, is locked up at this point. 20-something games left in the season. I don't think there's any budget. Let me break it down. Obviously, the MVP, you know the top four candidates. We'll see what happens. And I'll say it again, no matter who of the top four candidates win, I'm happy because there's nobody that's above the others. I hope it's as close as I think it will be when the voting comes around. The most improved player is Tyrese Maxey. I tried to do as much Kobe White propaganda as I can, but Kobe White can't hit the side of a barn with a rock right now. So it's not going to be him. Next, Rookie of the Year, we talked about it. It's going to be Wimby. Chet, congratulations on being runner-up this year. You deserve some roses, but it's Wimby season, right? DPOY, Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, this is one of them awards that's been locked up since like November. As soon as the Minnesota Timberwolves jumped out the gate and was defeating teams left to right and their defense is number one in the league, everybody's like, it's Rudy. And there is no number two. Like, it might be Jared Allen. It might be Wimby. But how are you going to be the second in DPOY when your team is 24th? I know how good you are, how good they are when you're on the court, but still. The clutch player of the year is Steph Curry. It's Steph Curry. Oh, Kenny, you know, he turned the ball over that one time. It's Steph Curry. Stop it. Cut it out. It's Steph Curry, clutch player of the year. Sixth man of the year. Now, this is what I'm going with this. Oh, coach of the year is Mark Dayton. No, let's lock. Sixth man of the year. Did I get all the other ones? Rookie of the year, most improved. I believe I did. It's Malik Monk. What are we doing? It's Malik Monk. I watched Malik Monk take that award away from, well, he was already the front runner, but he put himself so far ahead a couple nights ago. They were playing against the Minnesota Timberwolves, Sacramento Kings, Minnesota Timberwolves. In this game, Anthony Edwards leaves at halftime for the birth of his kid. So congratulations to Anthony Edwards and everything. He was having a terrible game anyway. And also no De'Aaron Fox in this one. De'Aaron Fox is still out with an injury. So they start Davion Mitchell on some stuff. And in the first half of this game, Malik Monk had like 5 points. He ended with 39. I watched him come off the bench in that second half and get a win against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Again, without Anthony Edwards, but still the Minnesota Timberwolves. And that was a game that the Timberwolves went with the triple big lineup. And I love when they do that. They don't do it often. And I watched Malik Monk hit dagger after dagger, big shot after big shot. And again, the criteria for sixth man of the year over the last 20, 30 years is you have to be, again, a sixth man on a good team, a playoff team at the bare minimum. And I'm looking at all the other teams out there that could be in the running. This guy, no. It's Malik Monk. And he secured it the other night. And I just want to get my flowers. I just want to get my flowers to Malik Monk. Because that was a huge, huge win for them going against, at that time, the number one seed at Minnesota Timberwolves. And now the Wolves have lost two in a row. So we'll see what's about that. But I just want to give my love to Malik Monk right now. That's my ballot. And then the next thing is, of course, MVP. And we'll talk about that again every week or so. Before we get out of here, let's go to your favorite segment. Greg's Eye Test Takes. It's been a few episodes since we've seen him. Let's do it.
All right, Kenny. First one. Jalen Williams of the Thunder could have a similar trajectory to James Harden, getting his own team, being a top guy. But in my opinion, he should stay playing with SGA for as long as he can.
Oof. James Harden turned into an MVP. And though I believe that Jalen Williams right now is a top 30 player in basketball. And I think he has the potential to, of course, get a lot better. But getting to the point of being the guy on a team that won 65 games multiple times, it's just a little bit of a stretch to me. But I do believe he's going to end up being one of the better players in basketball. But the second part of the take, I completely, completely agree that being second fiddle is not as bad as some people might make it seem. If anything, you see how good they are right now with him being the number two option. And he's going to get better. Shea's going to get better. They could collectively, I'll add Chet in there too, be one of the better big threes in recent history. So I agree with the second half more than the first half because James Harden is just like a crazy anomaly.
So if Harden isn't the accurate ceiling for Jalen Williams, who would be a better comp?
That's a good question. That is a very good question. It's hard to say, man, because ceilings are just tough for me, especially with a guy like J-Dub, who's every month of his NBA career, he's just been better across the board. That I can't even give you a ceiling other than saying that like MVP of the league is maybe just a bit too high. That like that's probably where it's at. But who knows? Like I could be completely wrong. Like that's how the NBA works. I mean, if OKC thought that James Harden was going to be one of the greatest shooting guards of all time, I promise you they wouldn't have traded him away and kept Serge Ibaka. But we just didn't see it in the time, and maybe I'm not seeing it in J-Dub.
Next one. This Jordan Poole trajectory was bound to happen with or without the Draymond punch.
So you backing up your boy Dre here.
You can look at it that way, or you can look at the way I view Jordan Poole.
Yeah, no. The best thing, and this is something my boy Mike has said on our podcast, and when he said it, I was like, whoa, like it's a very simple statement, but I didn't even think about it, where he said that Steve Kerr found the perfect amount of Jordan Poole. The perfect amount of Jordan Poole, right? You didn't need to play him 30 minutes per game, and now you're seeing that with or without the punch. I was not one of those people that believed that Jordan Poole was going to be a future all-star. I was not in that camp. When he got traded to the Washington Wizards, you know, we were talking about who's most improved player, this and that. I remember people saying he's going to average 25. And I was like, I just watched him play for multiple seasons where he was very solid off the bench. I can't get to that ever. But also, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. And I don't want to put it solely on the punch, right? I think it obviously plays a part. I think you can't get past the punch and say that it doesn't play any part, but it being the main part, I think is maybe a stretch. But damn, he's bad. Like really bad. And the best thing he could do is find Bob Myers and give him a huge ass hug because that contract that Bob gave him before Bob left, it's going to feed his family for decades, and he has not played to that caliber ever. I remember when he got the contract, and I honestly think I defended it in real time. Not a good take, but whatever.
All right, next one. You mentioned the Warriors briefly earlier, got bombed by the Celtics today, and they had a game plan that Draymond said was implemented 15 minutes before the game, which was to basically let Jaylen Brown shoot wide open threes. Jaylen Brown made them pay. He hit 5 threes in the first quarter. I only watched the first few minutes of this game, and he actually, I think, missed his first 2 or 3 threes. And in my mind, at that moment, I thought, not only just because he missed, I thought the game plan was not inherently stupid, and I think playing head games with Jaylen Brown wasn't a terrible idea. I'll leave it at that. How do you react to that?
I'm not mad at the idea. I think that the part that struck me is like we found out 15 minutes before. I think that's the problem, right? It's not like you just got off the plane on the second night of a back-to-back, and now we're trying to implement some stuff. I looked it up beforehand. Jaylen Brown hadn't been having an amazing shooting stretch before this game. I think in that first quarter, he had 5 eventually after missing the first couple. I think that when you go against a team like the Boston Celtics, especially in a game like this, like these two teams are not going to see each other in the playoffs. I'm sorry. They're not making it to the finals. You have to try to pick and choose. I think it is interesting, though, because this was no Porzingis game, right? So usually it's like, we'll live on a Porzingis 3. That's what a lot of the other teams across basketball, and Porzingis has made every team pay. I think his points per possession, even on the post-up, is like all-time high. Like, he's having a phenomenal season. He's made everybody pay. But in the game without Porzingis, and instead it's Al Horford, it is kind of weird to see that Jaylen Brown is the guy. But again, we've seen, you know, peaks and valleys in Jaylen Brown shooting throughout his career. So I don't hate it too much. But I also don't think that was the sole reason they lost this game. You know, letting Jaylen Brown shoot does not put you down 50. I just say there was a lot of small things that turned into big things that get you to the point. And I'm just like you. I watched the first quarter and a half of this game. And when I saw at the end of the first quarter, there's a 22-point lead, if I'm not mistaken, for the Boston Celtics, I said that this game is probably over. And that's when I transitioned to watch Clippers versus Wolves, because I thought that held more weight in the grander scheme of the NBA. So I don't hate the idea, but obviously it didn't work.
Yeah, I think when you have just won a few road games in a row, you're in the last game of a road trip and you're expected to lose, I think trying something out of the box can be commendable, but at the same time, you know, it pays and they paid.
Yeah, I was excited to watch Moses Moody tonight because obviously Wiggs is out for some time again, and Moody, and at least in the last game, looked phenomenal. When inserted into that lineup today, I got no opinion about Moses Moody because I don't even remember seeing him. Like, I remember watching the first quarter and a half, but I don't remember anything Moses Moody related. So some interesting stuff in Warriors. It's always something going on with the Warriors franchise. And now it's Wiggins being out again. And they said personal reasons. I'm wishing him and his family nothing but the best. But another timing thing was like, another blow to the Warriors.
Very much deja vu. All right. Next one. We got two more quick ones. The All-Star Game MVP should never be considered when discussing someone's all-time ranking.
Oh, 100%. Like, if anybody's doing that, they are tripping. Like, we just watched, who was it? Dame just won it this year. I can't even remember. It was 2 weeks ago. Dame just won it. And that doesn't, like, there was no effort there. It's just Dame shooting from half court, which is dope, which is cool, I guess. But are we seeing that? That's what we got?
You don't see those on graphics where it's like it lists all the accolades, and a lot of times it's, you know, three All-Star Game MVPs like Kobe. I guess it mattered more when Mike was playing and even when Kobe was playing. I think that the game had a little more weight. But to do it now, it's just silly.
No, okay, I can see that because I remember Kobe saying that he enjoyed the All-Star Game because he wanted the best players in the world to play like the best players in the world. And then right at the end of his career, he mentioned how pickup games at UCLA have more competition than the All-Star Game right now. So it is, it's a lot different now. And then same thing with Jordan. Jordan wanted to bust everybody's ass in the All-Star Game. So I can see it then. But yeah, if we talk about Dame when his career is over and they say, oh, All-Star MVP, we've gone too far. I know that's going to ruffle some feathers, but let me know in the comment section what you agree or disagree with. If you enjoyed the episode, leave a like, subscribe, Spotify, Apple, all of the places you can find your podcast. Go over there and give us 5 stars now. Still give me 5 stars if you disagree. I hope you would do that. Comments is always open. I'll see y'all in a couple days.